This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Efficient e-Solutions Berhad provides integrated business process outsourcing services ranging from document storage management to the provision of IT services. Good morning, I'm Brian Fernandez and with me is Victor Chia, Group CEO of Efficient e-Solutions Berhad. Victor is here to tell us more about how he is trying to turn around the business and some of the new areas they're venturing into. Welcome to the Breakfast Grill, Victor.
Oh, good morning, Brian. Thank you for having us here today.
Now, Victor, in September 2015, you divested your entire equity stake in two wholly owned subsidiaries to Canon Singapore for 75 million ringgit. Now, why did you exit that business, especially when those two companies were generating the bulk of your revenue and profits at the time?
Okay, I think to answer that question, really, it's more of, I would come to answer that as more of a commercial decision. Obviously, we were approached by Canon on whether or not there was an interest in divesting that. Okay, obviously, after much consideration, given the fact that we have been looking at the whole industry as a whole in terms of the print, obviously, as you understand, we traditionally print most of the bank statements and insurance documents in Malaysia for the last 20 years. Now, that landscape was slowly changing, and we found that a lot of the initiatives by the financial sector was moving towards an electronic form of distribution of their documents. So we found that if there was an opportunity to exit it at the right price, that was the natural thing that we started the discussion, and then the rest is history.
So essentially what you did was you saw the trends, you decided that you wanted to cash out at that period of time because the industry trends were moving more towards a digitization than paper.
Correct, correct. We see, we speak to our clients regularly, and they were telling us that their management's initiative was to push towards more of an e-delivery of their statements. So we felt that, okay, given that circumstances, we are really looking at catching a falling ball, so to speak. And if the right person comes in, the right partner comes in and says, so are you interested to divest? And obviously, the consideration was not easy. The decision wasn't easy in the sense that we had a lot of loyal employees with us over the years. But I think given that it was a Canon company, giving a I think it's a Fortune 500 company, ranked around about the 200 range, and they were going to take the business forward. They were going to take this as a stepping stone to making it a regional base. Right, moving it towards the ASEAN region, Asia-Pacific region, to build their services platform. Now, obviously, Canon is known for producing not only cameras. Canon has also gone into producing production printers.
Yeah, and they're also very big in the imaging business.
Yes, imaging, and they went to hospital imaging services. So printers was something that they felt that it wasn't easy to sell large production printers because people were reducing the volume. So the best way for them to continue to be able to be in that space of printers, they had to go into services. I mean, like the rest of the big guys, right? HP and everything, IBM, they've all gone into services because it's not just about selling hardware, right?
Yeah, you can't sell boxes anymore.
So you got to sell services. And that was the direction. And I felt that looking at their mottos, their goals, and their culture, and it was right that, okay, passing on the employees to them would have been the right fit. If it was any other local company coming in, trying it out, we may not have divested. But that Canon gave a vision into making sure that the rest of the people who are staying on board will be developed further. And I think that was a right decision at that time. Though, yes, I understand you asked the question, you know, being a core business, it's never easy to go and find something brand new. But we felt that we still had the document storage business with us, okay? Partially done by our associate company, Regalia Records Management. And also, we were expanding that within the Efficient home base. So if you look at it, some people will argue that, you know, it's also a paper-based business. You're storing documents. Is it going to go away? We had a different thought process to that because what we saw was that there were new customer acquisitions. Basically, people who were not traditionally storing offsite, they were renting their storeroom somewhere. They were starting to look at it differently because they realized that they still needed, for statutory reasons, to keep these documents. And at times, they need to retrieve it on on-demand basis. And if they had their own storage, they would not have, they would have difficulty finding it because they probably were not cataloging it in the right format.
So, Victor, what you're saying is basically a different group of customers realized that they had a long-term need. And I suppose this would be industries like the healthcare industry,
for example. Yes, especially. Actually, as a matter of fact, over the last 18 months, there has been a lot of acquisitions from the healthcare. We are storing a lot of hospital documents now. We are even going towards whereby there's what I call on-demand delivery. If the patient comes in the hospital and the file wasn't there, and we have to deliver it within an hour.
So I see. So that's a very different type of service. That's almost a last mile kind of delivery service.
Yes, we have to because we're storing it, right? So we're storing it, and we don't know when it's going to happen. So we offer that service, and we offer the document storage service as well as expanding it to a 24-hour on-call kind of a thing for document retrieval.
But would you then digitize those documents as well?
Okay, now, digitalizing is an expensive exercise. Okay, it's an expensive exercise given that the fact that there's not some, the actual scanning is not expensive. The actual one is actually when you try to do a document preparation and indexing. How easy do you want to be able to pull that lettered document? Are you going to index it by what kind of field, how many fields you are? So that becomes a bit technical. So whenever a customer comes to us and says, we would like to do digitalization, I think my fundamental question to them will be this. Well, you want to digitalize it. Why? Is it because you need to retrieve it frequently? Or is it just for storage? If it's for storage, then you're better off just saving the budget and keeping it in storage because the physical document is not going to go away in terms of durability and all that, right? So we know. But if you are going to need it to be retrieved regularly on a daily basis or a weekly basis, then you digitalize it. Then it makes sense. But on that note, we now offer a service called Scan on Demand. Now, what does that do is that, okay, when you want to retrieve it for the first time, that document, we scan it and we send it to you electronically. Then you can keep it. Then wherever you want to retrieve the same document, you now do not need to call for that service. You already have that image.
But Victor, okay, you've pointed a very rosy picture about the document business, but you set aside post-sale of that business, you set aside 25 million of proceeds to invest into the document management business.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, yet in your last annual report, you mentioned that you had spent just over 5 million on facilities,
mm-hmm.
but only 15% of the capacity was utilized. And you only made 700,000 in records management revenue. So isn't that a disconnect between the numbers and what you're telling us now?
Okay. It's okay, while I'm saying that there are new acquisitions, it's not a double-digit growth per se. It's not something that, what I'm trying to say is that it's coming to the stage of maturity where people are beginning to realize. We take records management industry as a whole, okay? The penetration rate in Malaysia is below 50%. Right? I think it's around 30% penetration.
And when you say penetration rate, is that an SME business or as a...
Generally both the SME business and enterprises, okay? Now, obviously, the bulk of the volume is going to come from enterprises, you know, because they're more, for example, they're more engineering companies today. Those that are building highways and everything, they now need to look at storing these plans. They don't do it themselves. So these are some of the potential clients that we are acquiring. Now, to answer your question, why is there a mismatch between the amount spent, the amount targeted spent and the returns? Obviously, because it takes time. The gestation period of these takes time. When we sign up a customer, we need to go and do indexing for them and packing for them. So sometimes that takes 6 to 9 months. Obviously, the facilities we are doing is also being used by our associate company called Regalia Records Management. So they are also
which you have a 30+%
30+% 30% on it to be exact. So it's a long term. It's got a good at least growth rate of at least the next 5 to 8 years, purely because of the fact that there are new entries, people who are now realizing that I should store it offsite. Right. Healthcare, you pointed out correctly, healthcare is one. I think over the last 6 months, I think just on the associate level, Regalia has actually acquired 3 or 4 more new hospitals as a clients. And these are new hospitals. Some of them are new hospitals, some of them. And the interesting part about it is they have never stored before. There are clients that we come across, they are storing with a competitor and they want to pull it out, right? For whatever reasons. But now you find that a lot of these new customers who are coming about are not storing with a competitor.
So essentially the pie is expanding.
The pie is definitely expanding. And I think it's quite visible, actually. If you look at the landscape of a document storage business, the two largest in the world, Iron Mountain, which is a global company, okay, they did an acquisition maybe about a year and a half, 2 years ago. They did an acquisition of Recall, which was the second largest in the world. So now they're basically the They're really the
800-pound gorilla in this business.
Yeah, so it's like whole thing, right? And the second one is actually in this region is actually big. It's actually Crown Records Management. So basically, we constantly we face these two people in the market. The advantage we have, obviously, is because we are a local homegrown company. So sometimes Malaysian companies do support us. They do support us.
Let's look at the financial performance after the sale. Now, your 2015 profit after tax was 45 million. Now, that's essentially because of the sale. Mm-hmm. Revenue was 200,000. Revenue recorded by the group in 2016 increased to 2.9 million. Mm-hmm. But you posted a 9.9 million loss after tax. Your net cash position in 2015 was 87 million. That dropped significantly to 64 million in 2016. In just 1 year, you went through 23 million in cash. Where did that money go?
Sorry, when you were looking at 87 million was after the acquisition, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, obviously, we gave a dividend.
Okay.
We gave a dividend, and subsequently, we built a new facility. Some of the money was spent on the facility in the Bandar Ensteng. Now, in Bandar Ensteng, we bought a sizable plot of land, a few plots, and that was purely for expansion purposes that would actually keep us going for the next 8 to 10 years. So we bought about 15 acres in Bandar Ensteng, and that would help us to not worry about acquisition of land going forward. Because that's one of the fundamental things about document storage. If you go and buy an expensive piece of land, that's it. It's not going to be profitable. So we managed to secure a larger piece at a lower cost from Bandar Ensteng, and then that's one of the reasons. And also the construction of the first facility on the first plot of land. And a bulk of the money was actually spent on paying off that construction cost.
One of the things that also contributed to the losses is if you look at compensation, executive director compensation was 5.3 million in the financial year 2016. Non-executive director compensation was 166,000. Do you think that the executive director compensation of 5.3 million ringgit was rather excessive given the fact that the business currently only turns over about 2.9 million.
I think that the executive director's compensation in 2016 was in line with after the sale of the business, right? I think obviously we had to go through a normal remuneration committee, the independent directors go through it. So to be honest with you, the executive directors have not been remunerated in terms of a bonus for quite a number of years. We're quite conservative, right? Over time, even though we don't pay ourselves a lot. And actually, when it comes to bonus time, the prior years, we actually kept a lot of it more for the employees.
When you say you kept a lot of it, what sort of quantum?
We didn't give a lot of bonus over time. I mean, but in a sense that what we contributed towards that, we never actually paid ourselves the bonuses. Because we felt that, again, coming back to the question, 3 years prior to that, we felt that, okay, it's the volumes are dropping and, you know, we see that it is a sunset business. So we need to conserve. And that's the result. Obviously, once we have done it and we sold the business for 19 times price earning, we felt that, okay, maybe we should give ourselves
a reward,
a bonus. And that was proposed by the remuneration committee, given that we have not taken that for quite a number of years.
I'm Brian Fernandez, and I've been speaking to Victor Chia, Group CEO of Efficient E-Solutions Berhad. After the break, I'll be asking Victor about his future plans for the Efficient Group of Companies. Stay with us, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we are with Victor Chia, CEO of Efficient E-Solutions Berhad. Victor, in December 2016, the company submitted an application to Bursa for an extension of time to submit a new plan for the business. Now, Bursa granted you an extension up to 30th June 2017. What's the status of that currently? Have you identified a new business?
Okay, obviously, during the time when the reason we requested for the extension was that we were looking at opportunities. We were looking at certain acquisitions in the same space we were in, document management. So we worked on it, but however, some of them actually in 2017, none of them came to light for various reasons. Price point was one of them, excessive price asking, and in some cases we did lose the bidding to our competitors. They took over. I mean, as I said, you know, it's the obvious ones, the two largest in the world. So we lost out on that. So we seek for an extension, but we are currently during this next 4 months, or where our deadline is to submit the by June 30th, 2018. We are working on some initiatives. It's a mixture of, maybe we're talking to some people to expand our businesses. As well as, obviously, as I said, newly we launched a cybersecurity division.
So yeah, you acquired a business in October last year, Kapanam Technologies, Sundrian Berhad.
Yes, that's right. And basically, that was the starting point for us to get into the cybersecurity space. Now, traditionally, we are a business process outsourcing company and IT services. So this fit pretty well into what we have been doing. We are outsourcing a service that a client would otherwise do themselves, meaning securities operations center. And the other part of it is that there's an IT content to it. There's a lot of IT content to it, basically. I'll tell you why it should not fully be an IT content, because it's, you know, as I said, people say it's also a business risk. It's not just an IT risk today. So when we took over Carbogum, with Carbogum comes the founder, Mr. Clement Arul, which he himself is a Cybersecurity Award professional winner for 2014 and 2017 by Cybersecurity Malaysia. And I think he got another award for within the APAC region as well as a professional year.
So it was more of an acqui-hire than anything else. You wanted
Correct.
The guy.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he has been in this space for 15 years. And we sat down and we discussed about our common goals, common objectives. And we decided, okay, maybe it's time for us to collectively work together and take the cybersecurity space, give it a bit of a serious look at. And I mean, to be honest with you, actually, this business came to us 3.5 years ago. 3.5 years ago, actually, a Korean cybersecurity company approached us through a common friend, a Korean friend, and they were interested to come into the Southeast Asia space. And they approached us because they took a look at our profile, because we had the leading banks.
Yeah, you have all the customer relationships.
So they were looking at it and said, is there opportunity? But at the point in time when we spoke to the financial institutions, everybody was just doing, okay, I'm compliant to Banagara, so I'm not going to look beyond that. So that was that kind of a sentiments at the time. And when you talk about the other businesses, the small, medium enterprises and the other businesses, at the 3.5 years ago, we didn't have WannaCry.
Okay? Yes, we didn't.
We didn't have WannaCry. So the attitude was, it won't happen to me. Who am I? Who wants to hack us or whatever?
Yeah, the level of awareness was very much lower.
So obviously, you fast forward 36 months later, and then you look at 2016, 2017, that whole entire threat landscape has changed, right?
Yeah, in fact, and also receptiveness within Malaysia. So according to the Global Cybersecurity Index, Malaysia's ranked third among 193 countries in terms of commitment to cybersecurity. But the same survey said that basically Malaysian companies are still unprepared for cyber attacks, and they have a lot of gaps in security development.
Okay, on that note, Brian, what you see is that why is there, on one hand, we are ranked high? Because of the fact that we have a national security council. Under that council, under the Prime Minister's office, you also have what they have established is a national cybersecurity agency.
Yeah, so cybersecurity, right? Malaysia, right?
Yeah. Then no, it's actually national cybersecurity agency.
Okay.
And under NASCAR is cybersecurity Malaysia. So the cybersecurity Malaysia is basically the technical arm of that. And I think the government has done a fair bit in terms of driving the awareness, because obviously we have this objective of being a K economy kind of a situation in the near future. So they have put in enough acts. We have enough acts that cover that, right? The Multimedia Commission, Communications Act and all that. So while they do their part, it is also important that the private sector start looking at their own landscape. Okay, you ask a question, a lot of businesses are not aware of it. Because don't forget, small, medium enterprises business are traditional business people. They're not technical people. So if you look at it, right, if you go and start talking, even start a conversation with them and about how vulnerable they are, what kind of IT systems they have, I think you lose them in 1 minute. You lose them in 1 minute. But I think the landscape has changed, and I think a lot of awareness programs need to be driven across to them to reach them, and giving them specific stories of different industries, how different people get affected, right? That's one of the priorities that we have set ourselves to do as an organization. Don't forget the four pillars of how our national cybersecurity policy. They talk about legislation and regulation. They talk about technology. And one part they talk about is private and public sector collaboration. And this is the part that we have been trying to work closely with Cybersecurity Malaysia to increase the awareness.
Stephen, you know, you're in a space, you're a new company. You set up a few months ago. You essentially are in a very competitive landscape. Your competitors are global giants, essentially providing services. On the private sector side, you have the IBMs, the Sophos, the F-Secures of this world. Then on the government side, you've got the likes of High Tech Padu. So where is your value proposition? Okay. How are you going to compete?
Okay, the difference here would be this. Most of these people are offering solutions for the enterprises in terms of what technology they need to adopt. Okay, but for us, what we are coming in the services space, and our main differentiator today is we are addressing the latest threats landscape. Now, don't get me wrong. The firewalls and antivirus are still needed. Those are your basic front door things that you need to put. But the hackers today, the bad guys today, are coming from the side doors. They're coming from, they're masquerading themselves from different angles. So where they're coming from is actually the weaker link, which is your endpoint, your notebooks, your mobile devices. So our main differentiator is basically now we are actually giving you a solution that basically gives you an endpoint detection and response. So we are looking at, you see, you take example for enterprises. A lot of enterprises will have large IT policies. You know, you have no thumb drive, hardened computers and everything. But when you take your computer home, you're going to go back, you're going to hook up to your Wi-Fi. Your Wi-Fi has almost no security at home.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So that's where the bad guys try to come in. They come in through your Wi-Fi and they connect to your computer. Now, you can have all that. Your firewall is not going to detect it because you're not connected. When you get back into your office network, that's when the problem can begin. I'm not saying it will, but it can begin. We started this like maybe the last 1-2 months, and we had onboarded some clients. And you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised what we find. When we onboarded these customers, the typical customer had 50 computers. Only one was infected.
And, okay.
And they didn't detect it because it wasn't doing anything harmful. All it was doing was taking the computing power and mining cryptocurrency.
I see. Interesting.
Right? So you don't see things like that, you don't not know. You don't detect it because they're not doing something unusual. Whereas our differentiator, when we talk about endpoint detection, what we are looking at is behavioral. Now, don't forget, today, the malwares are coming in different forms, as I said. I'm not a technical person, but when you say different forms, they come in. They used to be attached to a file. Now they are fileless.
Okay, so essentially what you're doing is you're carving out a niche for yourself in terms of behavioral.
Correct. So we're doing behavioral. There's a bit of AI behind it. We're doing some research on that. We are looking at more of a predictive model. Okay, predicting what would happen. So as a result, during our launch, obviously we had the support of the different cert people from Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, Indonesia.
So that's Indochina is your strategy
Indochina,
then?
Yeah. Indochina and Malaysia, obviously Malaysia being our home base.
Why Indochina? How are you going to compete there?
Okay, Indochina is obviously infrastructure-wise is relatively much lower than us. Okay, and in developed countries. And you need to understand that the threat landscape is such that they are always looking for the weakest. The bad guys are looking for the weakest point. They're going to come into the ASEAN bloc, look for the weakest country in infrastructure, start the attack from there. The launch pad will be from ASEAN to the rest of the world.
So, Victor, what is the expectation of numbers moving forward?
Okay, we obviously from the document management space, it's not besides the organic, we are obviously looking at a right fit for an acquisition that's still on the lookout. But for the cybersecurity space, yes, I get you when you mean you're a homegrown, what makes you different from the big boys. I think the difference here will be we're delivering the services not only with that, with processes. And mind you, we are going for the SME. And we believe that obviously the threat landscape is not going to get better. Right, 2017, what people say is that the hackers have just served you their appetizer. So the main course is coming. So if that would drive enough awareness to tell people, look, you need to be cyber resilient. And going to these SMEs, we are targeting to reach, over the next 5 years, we're targeting to reach close to 15,000 SME customers, reaching out to them, meaning giving them awareness program training. Hopefully within that, we get a certain 15-20% conversions as our subscription customers, and that's where we how we see the numbers getting back to its historical values. You know?
Victor, it was a pleasure having you on The Breakfast Grill. That was okay. Victor Chia, Group CEO of Efficient eSolutions Berhad, and you are with BFM 89.9, the business station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U Mobile. Your passion drives our unlimited ideas.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.